8:35, we're going to call this meeting to order on Wednesday, November 16th. Please make sure you mute or turn off your electronic devices. And Dr. James, can you do the roll call?
Dr. Byrne?
Here.
Ms. Krieger?
Here.
Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. James is here. Mr. Logie?
Here.
Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson? And Dr. Wright?
Also absent.
Okay. We have quorum.
Make sure Dr. Wright wasn't. Nope. It's not the lead for this. All righty. So we are going to start with Section 2, Initial Investigative Review, Number 2, 22-125, in regards to Judith Cashman, DVM. Tracy, could you read the case summary?
Yes. So case 22-125, the complainant is Maja Rodriguez, the respondent is Judith Cashman, DVM. On March 11, 2022, Lewis, a one-year-old male golden doodle, was presented to respondent for rear leg lameness for 1 day. The dog was examined. No distinct area of discomfort was noted or specific lameness in either limb. Radiographs were performed. No obvious issues were identified, and the radiographs were sent to be reviewed by a radiologist. The dog was discharged with Rimadyl and Trazodone pending radiograph review. On March 18, 2022, respondent advised complainant that the radiologist suspected the dog's lameness in the right rear leg was likely secondary to a cruciate injury. Respondent referred complainant to a boarded orthopedic surgeon. On March 30, 2022, the dog was presented to Arrow Animal Hospital for a second opinion for the cruciate injury. By this time, the dog's condition had progressed and was now showing neurological deficits in both hind limbs. Radiographs and blood work were performed, including a valley fever test. Radiology review suspected a valley fever lesion on the spine, and evaluation by a neurologist was recommended. On April 1st, 2022, the dog was seen at Veterinary Neurology Center for evaluation. MRI showed spinal cord compression at L1 with spinal cord edema from T13 to L2. The dog was hospitalized for treatment and was discharged on April 5th, 2022. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you, Tracy. We do not have the complainant here, but we do have the respondent and their attorney, if you would like to come forward to address the board. Introduce yourselves, and then I can give you up to 5 minutes to speak.
Awesome. I'm Dr. Judith Cashman.
Good morning. I'm Leanne Hay on behalf of Dr. Cashman. You'll have to excuse me if I lose my voice at some point today. Just briefly, Dr. Cashman complied with the standard of care in her treatment of this pet, and we agree with the investigative committee's recommendation for dismissal. Should there be any questions, we are available. Otherwise, we are just requesting that the board follow the recommendation and dismiss the complaint.
Okay. Thank you. You guys may step back.
There's not a complaint in here.
There's not, yeah. So you can stay right there. And let's see, the lead on this is Dr. Nosley.
Okay, thanks. In this case, a patient who had a presumptive diagnosis of cruciate disease and ultimately ended up having a valley fever lesion in the spine. In reading through all the materials, there are some concerns. I struggled with this one a little bit. Based upon the initial examination by the respondent, seemed to be complete and pretty unremarkable. There were some subtle flags or indicators at that point that there might be something more going on with the dog, but they were very subtle at that point, namely the abnormal gait, possibly some nonspecific pain, and I think it, argument could be made that, that blood work at that time might have been a good idea. However, it seemed to be that, that it was pretty unremarkable, so then radiographs were taken. And then ultimately, based upon the radiographs, we had a presumptive diagnosis made. And here's where I have some more concerns regarding this case. The radiologist reported back that no lesions were seen in the spine. However, looking at it very closely and looking at those radiographs that were submitted and where the lesion ultimately was discovered, that area was collimated out of the radiograph. So the radiologist wouldn't have seen this lesion, and he reports that we, on that view that he got, there were no spinal lesions. And again, if you follow the case on, then the lesion was very evident. I don't know that that's a the responsibility of the respondent, but she's using that as a defense that there were no lesions. As far as the cruciate goes, the radiologist said, we have some effusion in the stifle, and that could be consistent with cruciate. However, he said, we definitely would like to see a detection of anterior drawer, plus or minus. So my problem is, we made a presumptive diagnosis pretty much based on this report from the radiologist. And in my experience, detection of anterior drawer sign is the hallmark of cruciate disease, not radiographic evidence. He also reported some atrophy of the hind legs, which wouldn't support a unilateral cruciate. So I think there was too much reliance on that report. The respondent in the investigative committee stated finally that she thought she had checked for drawer. It was a little bit unclear. As the case followed on, there were two other doctors who said there definitely was no anterior drawer in the dog. And by that time, we were well into the diagnosis of valley fever of the spine. So the other concern I have with the case is the follow-up. There was a discussion where, and it's too bad the complainants aren't here, that the dog was not doing well after the initial exam and had some bilateral signs. And someone, other than the respondent, someone technical staff said, oh, well, he probably ruptured his other cruciate. And I think that's a real problem, leaping to that. I think if you have a dog that you can see came in for unilateral lameness, and then now we have a bilateral problem, that screams to me, we need to check something else. We need to get in there and recheck this dog. So I had some problem with that, whether that's the responsibility of the respondent at all. That's for discussion. That's where I see problems with this case and the communication, whether we are going to say there was a misdiagnosis of valley fever diagnosed as cruciate disease, and so there's a violation there for a misdiagnosis. They can't quite go there based upon that initial exam. However, I did see some some concerns with the case, and that therefore I'd like to hear from the other members of the board how they felt about the case.
Please let the record state that Dr. Wright has now joined us.
I think I probably still be recused from this one.
Yes,
though.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I think these cases are difficult because it looks like, at least from my assessment of when the dog initially presented, that there was obviously some right-sided issue, but the dog seemed otherwise ambulatory, walking well. Like, things progressed pretty rapidly, it sounds like, from when the initial visit to when they got to the neurologist. So I kind of feel like it's hard to say what was actually present on this visit. And I don't think it's uncommon to have this nondescript kind of lameness. You can't figure out quite what it is. You take x-rays, you send them in for review. Based on that review, yeah, I agree. We probably should have felt the knee a little bit better based on that. But I also go, if you're not going to actually be the one treating the condition, you refer it, does it matter if you have them come back to you? You know what I mean? Like, I don't necessarily know that I go that adding that additional step of coming back to me if I'm going to end up referring them anyway is necessary. But I also don't think it falls below our standard of care. I agree with you on anybody who said there was a second cruciate there. but you know, the thing is like technicians and bed assistants and receptionists, they say things and they've heard it said before in some other context, and then they repeat it, and it's like, man, you can't be responsible for everything that's said by your staff, because staff say some crazy things sometimes. So I'm like, yeah, you can address it after the fact, but I just don't know how you can really be responsible for that.
I agree.
Yeah, I would agree. The respondent made a referral to get the radiograph looked at, even, and if the radiograph wasn't complete, you know, you'd like the radiologist to ask for us second set of x-rays,
yeah,
to more clearly define a spine. But I guess the timeline and the amount of time from the presentation of initial lameness to that, I mean, they found that the ultimate diagnosis was found, you know, relatively quickly, I would, in my estimation, just by, she made a referral, and there was another referral to the neurologist, so.
Mm-hmm.
I think the effort was made there to get an answer.
Okay.
I mean, ideally, we would have reevaluated that knee.
Oh, for sure.
You know, like, I mean, ultimately, but I think if you're referring it for evaluation of it for a cruciate, is that really the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
You're just not doing it yourself.
Right.
And I do know, like, in a one-year-old golden doodle, it could be pretty hard to get a drawer if they're not somewhat sedated.
For sure.
So.
Definitely. Yeah.
Is it better to just have them go to where the experts, it probably depends on your confidence level,
yeah,
you know, and how many of these you've done, and if you feel like mm-hmm. you're going to sedate this dog and not be able to know for sure, you probably want to refer it, right?
Yeah. Well, ideally, in hindsight, you would say, well, this is not following a typical cruciate, so somebody needs to see this dog right away and figure out what's going on, mm-hmm. especially when this case became bilateral.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm leaning toward a letter of concern regarding communication in this case. And so I would make a motion that we would send a letter of concern regarding improving communication in cases, ongoing cases.
Okay. A motion for a letter of concern? To dismiss the case and issue a letter of concern.
Yeah, dismiss the case and issue a letter of concern.
A second?
Second.
Okay, motion and a second to offer a letter of concern. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Thank you. You may step back. So now we're going to go down to number 622131 in regards to Elizabeth Munhall, DVM. Tracy, do you want to read the case summary for that?
Yes, and this is the case that the council has requested a postponement. But I'll go ahead and read the case for you guys to discuss.
Thank you.
Case 22-131, the complainant is the Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board. The respondent is Elizabeth Blunthall, DVM. On August 14, 2021, Toby, an approximately 8-year-old male, Deshaun Maltese-Mix, was presented to respondent's associate, Dr. Vixen, for a dental cleaning. Blood and urine was collected for testing and revealed the dog was a surgical candidate. The procedure was performed and the dog was discharged later that day. On August 17th through August 20th, 2021, the dog was presented to respondent's premises due to vomiting and not eating. The dog did not improve and blood work revealed elevated liver enzymes. On August 21st, 2021, the dog was presented to a specialist for advanced diagnostics and treatment. After evaluation and an abdominal ultrasound, acute hepatitis was suspected. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board find ARS 3222-33B3 for failure to document in the medical record on August 17th, 2021, the treatment slash diagnostics recommended to the customer. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-1, with Dr. Dow opposed.
Okay, thank you, Tracy. We do not have the complainant present. We do have the respondent's attorney. If you'd like to come forward and... Thank you.
Hello again. Angie, on behalf of Dr. Munhall, we did request an extension in this case. Dr. Munhall, first, is not able to be here today. She does now live in Texas. We submitted a request for an extension on, I believe, Monday. I assume that the board is likely aware that Dr. Munhall was previously represented by my partner, Scott King, who passed away a couple weeks ago unexpectedly. Due to those circumstances, we are requesting an extension in just Dr. Munhall's case until only the next meeting, just to allow some more time to discuss the case with our client and ensure she is comfortable with us representing her before proceeding.
Okay, thank you. So Dr. Dosley, you are the lead on this. So
I think at this point it would just be appropriate to make a motion to postpone.
Second.
Thank you. So a motion and a second to postpone. Just case number 22-131. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And condolences.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll take your other case next then. 22-132 in regards to Teresa Duthie, DVM. Tracy, do you want to read?
Yes. Case 22-132, the complainant is the Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board. The respondent is Teresa Duthie, DVM. The summary is the same as Dr. Munhall's case for case 22-132. However, in this matter, the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board find ARS 3222-32, number 22, medical competence, failure to recommend diagnostics to a pet owner on August 18th, 2021, which possibly endangered the health of the dog. And the motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. Again, we do not have the complainant here, but we do have the respondent's attorney. If you'd like to come forward, and we can give you 5 minutes to speak.
Thank you.
Fabian Hay, on behalf of Dr. Duffy, who regrets that she cannot be here today. She moved to Florida at the beginning of this year. We are asking the board for, at most, a letter of concern for record keeping, as Dr. Duffy did meet the standard of care in her treatment of Toby. On August 18th, 2021. When Dr. Duthie saw Toby that day, he was 4 days out from a dental cleaning. She reviewed his prior records, saw that the dog had received sedation medications and had normal liver enzymes, and she conducted a comprehensive physical examination, noted that the dog was well hydrated, didn't notice any icterus, the sclera showed no signs of jaundice. There were no signs of polyuria, polydipsia, or hepatic encephalopathy. The abdomen was soft, non-tender, without masses. She provided subcutaneous fluids and sirenia, and she also recalls discussing or would have discussed, that the dog was taking the Serenity that had been dispensed the day prior by Dr. Munhall. She did discuss with the pet owner, per her standard practice, that the dog was possibly experiencing post-operative complications from the anesthesia, but that given it had been 4 days and the pet hadn't improved with the medications from the day before, that diagnostics and blood work could be run. This is Dr. Duffy's standard practice. She always reviews all options with pet owners, explains the importance of potentially doing each of the options, and lets the owner make the informed decision. While she does not specifically remember this pet or the owner, this is her standard practice. The owner did decline the diagnostics. Dr. Duffy does recognize and acknowledge the importance of documenting these conversations and recommendations, excuse me, and acknowledged as such to the investigative committee. Her standard practice is to review her notes at the end of each day. She is not sure if that didn't happen here, but she readily admits that it should have been caught and included in the records. However, she respectfully disagrees with the investigative committee's conclusion that the conversation did not occur. In fact, the owner called the following day requesting the diagnostics as discussed with Dr. Duffy, which provides circumstantial evidence that the conversation did occur. Dr. Duffy also respectfully disagrees with the investigative committee's citation to paragraph 22 of ARS 32-2232 for medical incompetence. Dr. Duffy did have the requisite medical knowledge to provide adequate care to Toby. She provided an appropriate examination and record review looking for concerning signs and symptoms, including liver dysfunction, and saw none, just as Dr. Munhall saw none the day before. Dr. Duffy had no reason to think that Toby was experiencing a rare reaction to anesthetic medication when his liver function showed up as normal on pre-op labs, and he had no presentation suspicious for liver concerns. Notably, the investigative committee believes that the care provided the day before was within the standard of care for recommending diagnostics by Dr. Munhall, which is precisely what Dr. Duffy did the following day. So by the same logic, Dr. Duffy's treatment was also within the standard of care. Worth noting is that the standard of care requires consideration of what the provider knew at the time, not a retrospective view of what is known now. And looking at what Dr. Duffy knew at the time, her recommendation for diagnostics and provision of medication was reasonable. Finally, as explained by Dr. Nick's expert report that I believe my partner submitted, Toby's prognosis would not have changed had anything differently been done on August 18th. Dr. Nick notes that when to offer diagnostics in the postoperative period is a case of clinical judgment, but that regardless, Toby was not harmed by the course of treatment or any delay of diagnostics until August 20th. Dr. Duffy's treatment of Toby was appropriate, and she had appropriate communications with the owner. However, she recognizes that those communications should have been documented. Accordingly, we are asking the board for, at most, a letter of concern related to those record-keeping issues. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And Dr. Nosley, you are the lead on this one again.
Okay. In this case, just to summarize, we had the dental procedure, and then the dog didn't do well after that and was seen by two associates in the practice. And is it Duffy with an F, you say it?
Duffy. You pronounce it like Duffy, but it is with a TH.
But you say it as Duffy.
Duffy. It is
Duffy.
TH,
Duffy,
yeah.
Gotcha.
But it's not Duffy.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah.
Dr. Duffy saw the on a recheck, saw the patient after the first associate on the case we just postponed. So the problem with this case is mainly with the records, because we don't have any way of looking at this and saying the actions were appropriate because we don't have the denial in the record. And that is a very important point in this. In this case of this dog having post-procedure hepatitis, regardless of what we're talking about, this patient would have benefited greatly from treatment early, and the earlier the better with this, which in this case would have been vigorous intravenous fluid therapy. And the sooner that's done in these cases, the better. So we had a delay through several days before that occurred, ultimately at another clinic. This patient did not do well from day one and that of going home after the procedure. So to me, that was would be very concerning. I disagree with the investigative committee that this is medical incompetence. I don't believe that this is medical incompetence. By not offering treatment, our failure to recommend the diagnostics, excuse me. So, but it's not in the records. I believe that there was a violation, and I would alternatively make this a case of 32-22-32-12 as it relates to R35011, failure to follow professionally accepted procedures by not recommending the diagnostics, which caused a delay in the diagnosis. And so I would, at this point, I'd like to hear from the other members.
Yeah, this is a tough one because the question is whether diagnostics were recommended or not, right? It's not exactly. In the medical record, so right.
We have to assume it didn't happen.
But I also go, sometimes we put judgment in who we feel is giving the best, the more accurate testimony, right? I mean, obviously we're not hearing from the client, but I mean, I feel like, we have to decide whether we believe that she did make those recommendations and just didn't document it, which is a medical records issue, or if she didn't make those recommendations at all and thought that her treatment plan was appropriate, then that's a different, right? So,
right.
Exactly. So as a committee, I guess that's the question, is we have to decide, and when it's not in the medical record, it makes it really hard. And you're not hearing from her directly either.
Right.
So.
Can I jump in there?
Yeah.
The respondent states that the next day the complainant called and wanted the blood work done. And so she uses that as evidence that she recommended it. And I don't think from reading through the complaint that that's the case at all. The complainant states that she was wanting blood work early on. Her dog was vomiting after the procedure from day one, and she was the one. There was an issue with the mother and the daughter and who was bringing it in and communication there, but I'm not accepting that, oh, I'm going to go ahead and do the blood work now that you recommended. I think there are other factors that may have. She could have not recommended any blood work and the client still called up and said, my dog's still sick, I need blood work. Mm-hmm. I think that's
I also thought it was interesting that the client said, like in that whole interaction in the waiting room, it sounded like with the daughter and the mom, that she goes, I honestly don't know if diagnostics were recommended, right? Like she didn't say they were or they weren't.
Right.
She clearly said, I don't know, which makes me go, you know, was the veterinarian, did she say it in passing? And it wasn't forceful enough, right? With the condition that we had in this dog. And the owner, it was so kind of nonchalant that the owner didn't even recognize that this was being made, right? So some of that might be that the veterinarian feels like they did do it, but they did it in a way such that the owner didn't even detect that was the case.
And
I don't know.
She also stated that she really can't remember the details of the case. The respondent can't remember the details of the case, clearly. So how do you say, I can't remember the details, but I know I recommend it because I always do. I'm not sure that in my experience, we're not robots. We don't do the same thing every time. I definitely would have recommended blood work, but I don't remember what I said in this case. That's a little bit of a stretch for me. So I guess that's why I'm leaning toward, it's not in the record, We're not clear at all about it, so.
And if it had been done, it may not have been done in a way that really said to the owner, this is necessary.
In that point also, right. We need to do this, your dog is sick, it's been vomiting since the procedure, so we need to get on this. Let's get some blood work done. I don't get it. Sounds like you don't feel like that was, it's possible that that wasn't presented that way. What you say, okay.
Okay, so we have a motion to offer a consent agreement. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, a motion and a second. We're gonna do roll call on this one.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Gregor?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Lohe?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
And Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Motion passes. Okay, then we can vote on which sanctions to impose through this consent agreement.
I would, do we need to accept the findings? We need to change the...
Yes, because they have different motives.
Let me get back to where I was here.
One could interpret the last motion as making the change that was proposed by Dr. Now.
Yeah.
As set forth in the investigative report, but just a different conclusional law.
Okay, great. But same facts, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
I would make a motion that we, let's first accept the facts of the case.
Second.
And so I would make a motion to accept the facts, findings of fact.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
Then I would make a motion to find a violation, not the investigative committee's violation, but 32-22-32-12 as it relates to R3-5011, failure to follow professionally accepted procedure by not recommending diagnostics on 8-18-21, which caused a delay in the diagnosis of acute hepatitis.
Isn't that what we already voted on?
No, that was the findings of fact. This is
the
conclusions
of
law.
Yeah, but prior to the findings of fact, okay. We voted on this, right?
This motion.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
So we just need to
history.
Now do what?
History.
Yeah.
History, yeah.
There's no previous disciplinary history.
Okay.
And she's out of state.
Yeah. So I would make a motion that we offer the respondent a consent agreement and that to be 4 hours of continuing education in, let's say, GI/liver disease.
Period of probation for 1 year.
And a period, you're right. A period of probation for 1 year.
No civil penalty.
No.
It's no prior.
No civil penalty.
Do we want to take that 4 hours and split it up and say maybe 2 in liver/GI and 2 in medical records, since the medical records are clearly not where we would want them to be with what level of communication happened.
Right.
But we didn't.
Because we don't
find
really,
we didn't state a violation.
We didn't state a violation, but we did say it's not professionally acceptable procedures for one, not either recommending it or documenting or clearly explaining the importance of these diagnostics. So I feel like it all kind of lumps together.
I agree. Yeah, I'd like to amend that to 2 hours of continuing education and medical records to and 2 in liver/GI disease.
Second.
Okay.
And can you, Dr. Nelson, would you be okay adding to the motion that if not accepted, invite in for an informal?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's do roll call again.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Gregor?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Lohe?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
And Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Okay, that concludes case 22-132. Thank you for being here. We're going to go back up to the top now to 22-124 in regards to Benjamin Savard, DVM. Tracy, if you'll read the case summary.
Yes. Case 22-124, the complainant is the Bassett family. The respondent is Benjamin Savard, DVM. On January 6th, 2022, Ringo, a 3-year-old male chihuahua mix, was presented to respondent for a dental procedure. Later that day, the dog was discharged. The following day, complainants noted that the dog was sore and did not want to be touched or picked up. On January 10th, 2022, respondent examined the dog and advised that it appeared the dog had alcohol burn during the EKG needs were placed during the dental procedure. On January 14th, 2022, respondent's associate evaluated the dog. Antibiotics, pain medication, and silver sulfonylurea cream were dispensed. Physiotherapy was also recommended and performed on the dog several times to aid healing. During a visit with respondent's associate, it was mentioned that the dog had obtained a thermal burn from the heating source during the dental procedure. On March 4th, 2022, the dog was presented to Cochise Animal Hospital for additional care. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board find ARS 3220-3212 as it relates to R311-502D for using an expired thermal device on the dog. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-0.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the complainant in this case. Mr. Stoll, are you?
I'm here representing the respondent, okay. Dr. Savard.
Great.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity to read the statement on behalf of Dr. Savard. As you just heard, this case concerns a dental procedure in which the patient Ringo developed a post-procedure skin condition that was caused by either a reaction to the rubbing alcohol used to place the EKG pads or a minor thermal burn. At the conclusion of their meeting last month, the investigative committee proposed a violation of R311-502D for Dr. Savard allegedly failing to make sure that no expired supplies were used during the procedure. The basis of that proposed violation was a statement Dr. Savard voluntarily made in his narrative response that following the procedure, his office manager discovered that one of multiple hot dog heating units at the practice had recently expired. However, the committee appears to have overlooked the next sentence in Dr. Savard's response narrative where he said, and I quote, "It is not definitively known if this was the blanket used on Ringo." In other words, the committee was speculating that it was the hot dog unit that was subsequently found to have expired that was used during the procedure, but no one can say for sure that it was in fact used. Actually, it's more likely than not that the expired pad was not used at the practice. They had 3 to 4 different ones on the day of the procedure. Following the committee's hearing, I did some product research on these hot dog units and submitted the materials that you now have from the hot dog user technical manual. As you can see, the risk associated with using a hot dog unit beyond its 24-month expiration date is not that the unit will overheat and cause a burn. The risk is that the blanket will take longer to reach the set temperature because over time, the conductive polymer fabric oxidizes. In other words, an expired unit is less likely to cause a burn than an expired unit. In light of the fact that we simply don't know if the expired hot dog pad was used in this case, and given the information that I provided, that if it had been used, the risk of a thermal burn would have actually been reduced, not increased, we do not feel that the proposed violation of using an expired supply is justified or supported by the evidence. As a result, we ask that the complaint be dismissed, or at most, you issue a letter of concern. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stoll. All right, Dr. Wright, you are the lead on this.
Yes, thank you. So this is basically just going to be a discussion between all of us and then me, where we're going and what's going on today, and was this in relation to a possible expired unit? Was this one of those things that happens or what? I mean, personally, I'm not a fan of hot dog warmers. I've seen multiple burns from them. So, I mean, they definitely do burn animals from time to time. I've seen it from alcohol getting on the pad and making a new conductive surface and allowing the heat to transfer too quickly. There's the damage to the actual pads themselves from folding, from cleaning them improperly. You can break the elements inside. I'm just not a huge fan. I've refused to work with them ever since basically they were first released, or at least when I first learned about them. So burns do happen. I guess the question is, was this an expired thing? Do we think it was related to that? Was this one of those things that happens or what? But I mean, a burn did occur. That's definitely a problem. I mean, that does kind of throw a wrench in there because they did volunteer the information about an expired pad. We don't know if it was used or not, but I mean, there's an expired piece of equipment there. So I mean, that may be a better violation than other violations could be. I don't know. So what are your thoughts on stuff? I don't.
Is Dr. Savard the responsible vet for the practice?
That's a good question. I don't know that one. I can look it up real quick, but.
I can tell you.
Oh.
Go ahead and continue.
I mean, it's a good question if it's going to be more of a practice licensee holder. What?
That was my thought on this, and Mr. Stoll brought it up, that if there was a problem, it wasn't with an expired blanket, because that just wouldn't work. It isn't going to burn it off.
Well, it can. They can. I mean, that is okay. Definitely one of those things we see, because you can get the elements inside and break. So it is known to do that.
It is known to do that. I couldn't find any instances in the literature or in the searching where burns had occurred, and I don't have any experience with these at all. I've only used air. So something caused a burn in this dog. And so the question that I have is, was it this pad or another pad, hot dog warmer? And I accept what you're saying, that you have some knowledge that they can cause burns. Because my thought was, well, it's not the pad, it's the controller. Well, if it was the controller, it would have burned other dogs. Mm-hmm. And the thing's still in use as of the investigative committees. It was still being used. So this one dog, out of all these dogs, got burned. So the question is, was there some other form of heat applied to this dog? Water bottles, which are really known to burn dogs. Then I look back at the anesthetic record, and the dog's temperature seemed to hold pretty steady through the procedure. It isn't like it got real low and somebody said, oh, we gotta warm this dog up. I didn't see that at all. So that's confusing. So I agree with you. Where do you go with this? The dog got a severe burn. So was it a hypersensitivity of the dog? I'm not gonna go there. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't an old dog with thin skin.
Right, I was gonna ask, does it have anything to do with the amount of hair they have? Or
anything?
It can, yeah.
Well, if Dr. Wright said that these can burn dogs, and if that's the case, it could have burned this dog to this degree. I don't know. So that's all the unanswered questions. So where do we fall? Is this a case of somebody using an expired, and this expired is only because it doesn't work anymore if it's expired?
I think we have to take the expired part out of it, because one, we don't even know that they used the expired.
Yeah.
Right. So we're hypothetically saying that they did. I just think we need to ignore that part, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And these, whether we like these units or not, they're out there. They're known in the industry. It's not like this veterinarian used something that was crazy and risky and all these things. Like, you always are going to have things that may happen with any procedure. And I don't see anything in here where they used a product that was wrong or they used it in an inappropriate way. I think it was a complication that happened, and I don't know that we're going to know why.
We're not going to
But bad things happen.
Should it be monitored when it's in use? I mean,
you can't tell, unfortunately. Really, so
the controller monitors itself.
It has a temperature sensor in the pad itself, but there's nothing to actually monitor. And even burns, you don't know for a day or two. Usually, that's the problem. Is it's not like immediate, unless it's like a fire burn. The thermal burns, they could show up later. Unfortunately, they're very insidious.
My bottom line concern on this case is, regardless of whether it's expired equipment or not, the dog was injured by a burn while under treatment.
and bad things happen. Dogs die under anesthesia every day.
Yeah, there's not always someone at fault.
I can't say they used a normal product. They used it in the right way from what I can tell.
We've certainly seen these before, not necessarily with the hot dog, but maybe with the warmer.
I mean, if he hadn't taken care of it, or she hadn't taken care of it after the fact, right, and hadn't done the right things after the fact, I'd say, yeah, now we're talking, you caused something, or potentially your procedure caused something, and you didn't take care of it, but I don't see that being the case either.
But I understand the frustration on the owner's part for having to do all this follow-up care that, of course, was, you know, they took their dog in for a dental, which how many people don't even do that in the first place, and then, you know, they're...
But I mean, dentals can have other issues too. Honestly.
And with eye under dentals sometimes, unfortunately. Weird stuff happens.
You can break teeth. So, you can break the jaw. I mean, think of how many cases we've seen where you've broken the jaw. Okay.
Especially those complications small dogs happen. Yeah.
So a lot of discussion. So.
Yeah, and I guess, did we get the, are we the premises holder?
Yes, he is.
Okay. So that kind of raised another question, because I mean, is it worth opening a second case, or is this a letter of concern about a possible expired product that could have been used? That was my other thought here.
And as a responsible veterinarian, you are responsible for removing expired products from the practice.
But is it worth, like I said, dismissing this or whatever we're going to do with this, and then opening another case under the actual premise holder, or just doing it under this one? I think it might be more clean just to do a letter of concern.
This one and do a letter of concern.
He is.
No, I know, but is it worth opening against the actual premise license, then doing a letter of concern that way, or just doing it all here?
Oh, no, I would do this for the same case.
I just do it here.
Yeah, so, okay. So, well, because there's an expired product in the actual hospital as opposed to a problem in this case is kind of my thought. But so, okay. I'll make a motion to offer a letter of concern for possible expired use of expired products in the hospital. I guess we'll just leave it at that. Not mention the burn there.
We have a motion to dismiss the case and offer a letter of concern in 22-124. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, a motion and a second. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay.
Okay, motion passes.